From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 27th day of February, 2017. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. We'll check the agricultural news for the afternoon, discuss the weather forecast, to that with Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse in Chicago, and get an update on the cash grain situation in Champaign and the surrounding counties from the Andersons Grain Elevator System right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Hey, good Monday to you today, Kurt, and I'm looking forward to having you over at the Beef House next week on Tuesday.
Oh, I always enjoy that event. It's a nice, informative meeting. It's nice to be able to visit for everyone. Just can't wait to get there, Todd.
Yeah, you and another dozen commodity brokers and analysts. We'll have Farm Bill Specialist there for the day, and Eric Snodgrass will kick us off like he did last year with a look into the weather forecast. If you've not seen Eric in action, that's a really good day, too. So hopefully we'll have a whole bunch of folks come along with us. We've got a lot signed up already, Kurt, but we could use a few more bodies in the building. Actually, we just have room for a few more bodies in the building. We don't need to have them. And they can do that online at willag.org or at 800-898-1065. So what happened in Chicago today? Especially, I think I want to start with the wheat just because it appears to have had the roughest day in Chicago.
Well, we have a first notice day coming up on wheat in the morning, and the ideas are we're going to see some fairly good deliveries. It seems like wheat and bean oil are the significant ones to seed deliveries. We'll see how those numbers unfold. If we do have big deliveries, oftentimes buying big deliveries is the feature. Weather-wise, moisture, some of these drier areas of in the forecast here is going to receive some moisture, and this wheat, as long as the weather does not turn cold and see a cold snap develop in through here, what few wheat acres we do have are off to a good start. Then lastly, Egypt's going to be in the market here this afternoon, and ideas will focus to other countries and skip the U.S. once again, Todd.
And then the other grains and oil seeds, corn and soybeans, what happened there?
Oh, fake news, more fake news, month end. The position squaring. What really is happening is if you look at the spread activity and so forth and who's doing what, we could be some position squaring. We'll see how volume and open interest goes, but it's mainly commercial trade. Basis contracts wrap up here. We're going to start, we have been seeing lows prior to the basis option maturity, March. Then our next low in the grains will be in April, ahead of the May, and in June, ahead of the July, and so forth as we go down the road. Once this all gets cleaned up and through here, I believe we're going to have a turnaround Tuesday, and we'll see commodity funds come back into the marketplace. Fundamentally, export inspections are good. We're continuing to see these the grains that we have sold being shipped out at a great pace. This morning here showed that we shipped out 1.4 million metric tons of corn, 704,000 tons of beans, and 537,000 tons of wheat. We're pretty well on schedule here as long as we don't see a whole lot of cancellation show up here. But I think rural grain traders want the grain, they're going to take it. Also, too, we saw a little concern about Mexico sending a trade delegation to the southern hemisphere to see what opportunities there are to purchase South American grain if trade relations between the U.S. and Mexico kind of erode away. But when you kind of look at that scenario, it's going to be 30 to 50 cents more per bushel to go to the southern hemisphere, which is quite a bit of premium. Most of the Mexican end users are set up to import North American corn, U.S. corn. So that'd be quite a expense to do that. But, you know, if they have enough money to do that, they ought to have enough money to help pay for the wall there, Todd.
Anything that you ought to look at in the livestock for the afternoon?
Cattle on feed report shows we've got manageable supplies up front. The fear continues to be in the deferred. When you look at placements, 10%, 110%, you know, the idea is we're going to continue to build numbers and see numbers come at us. We've got a huge discount in the back end on the cattle complex. So we'll see if that holds true or not. I think over time we're going to pull cattle forward, and that back end is going to gain some value over time. Pork-wise, we had a heck of a run in here. We're due to stabilize. Bacon demand starting to lose its sizzle in through here on the short term. But overall, meat consumption strong. And as long as we continue to see strong exports, I think the whole meat sector is holding together here as we move forward.
And thanks so much. And again, we'll see you next week at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
Sounds good. Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities. In today's agricultural news, it's budget time in Washington, D.C. The White House is expected to send its preliminary funding targets for 2018 to federal agencies today, asking for a 10% increase in military spending. The president does not want changes to major entitlement programs, including Social Security and Medicare, but many defense agencies are facing cuts. Trump wants billions of dollars in reductions to the EPA and State Department budgets. That, according to a New York Times article, social safety network programs, aside from the big entitlement programs for retirees, would also be hit hard. An OMB spokesperson says that the final Trump proposal, expected in mid-March, would take into account only agency operating budgets funded by Congress. Proposals on tax reform, according to the spokesperson, and so-called mandatory programs, including food stamps, student loans, health programs, and farm subsidies, would be released later. On that note, at the top of the agenda for farm groups this week will be the House Agriculture Committee's day in session tomorrow, during which members will tackle two key, albeit technical, farm bill programs. The Subcommittee on Conservation and Forestry is set to meet at 10 a.m. Eastern to look at potential changes to conservation policy in the 2018 reauthorization. Then at 2 Eastern, the Subcommittee on Livestock and Foreign Agriculture will gather to look at what can be done to improve international market development programs. One other note from the House of Representatives and its committees, the Appropriation Committee's Agriculture Subpanel will chat with Dallas Tonzegger, FCA's, that's the Farm Credit Association's chairman and CEO, during an oversight hearing. That'll happen tomorrow at 10 Eastern as well. Let's return now to last week's Agricultural Outlook for Mike Alston, Associate Administrator of USDA's Risk Management Agency, that's the RMA, and Deputy Manager of the Federal Crop Insurance Corporation Board, told attendees he has his eye on two priorities as he looks at the crop insurance landscape. Quote, he says, "We do a very good job with this public-private partnership. We want to maintain the high standard. The second thing he would like to do is to ask, are there areas of program expansion where we need to look?" And that comes from the ground up, from local communities, from grower groups saying, look, we have this particular commodity, this particular niche market out there. What can RMA do? Speaking of which, data that RMA shared at the Outlook shows insurance aimed at covering more diversified farms, known as whole farm insurance, has just about doubled in total liabilities over the year's time. That type of policy is now the sixth most popular, but accounts for $2.3 billion, or just 2.3% of total liability, according to the RMA summary of business data. Corn alone counted for $39.6 billion in liability in 2016. Well, let's stay with farm programs and crop insurance in particular. However, we'll move out of Washington, D.C. to the hearing held last week in Manhattan, Kansas, Testifying on behalf of ASA, the American Soybean Association, Lucas Heinen, who farms in Everest, Kansas, and serves as the president of the Kansas Soybean Association, pointed to the state of the farm economy as the most compelling signal of the need for a robust risk management framework in the Farm Bill, citing falling prices for soybeans and the reduced cost of the 2014 Farm Bill as compared to original estimates. Heinen noted that ASA will push to fund Farm Bill programs to the level needed to adequately address each program's need, even if that means increasing funding. I understand, he says, that the conventional view in Washington is that the cost of the farm programs and other parts of the Farm Bill will need to be reduced again, just as they were in the 2014 bill. This is not acceptable to producers, Heinen said. Heinen continued by detailing four key areas in which soybean growers will seek to make headway in the Farm Bill negotiations, including a strengthening of crop insurance and a continuation of the acreage revenue coverage or ARC option, decoupled from planted acreage, and with the shift to the use of yield data from USDA's RMA, as well as support for current conservation programs, including EQIP and the Conservation Stewardship Program, agricultural research, and energy title programs focused on biodiesel and bio-based products. Heinen also underscored ASA's commitment to increased funding for the development of export markets in the bill. And finally today, we'll come back to Washington, D.C., and the yet-to-be-confirmed Secretary of Agriculture. During that same Farm Bill field hearing last week in Kansas, Republican Senator from that state, Pat Roberts, said Sonny Perdue is just waiting. The Senate Agriculture Committee chairman says his committee has not received the required paperwork from the White House yet to schedule a confirmation hearing for Perdue. Insiders with the Department of Agriculture have hinted that a confirmation hearing and vote is likely in early to mid-March. Perdue was the final cabinet selection for President Donald Trump, with Trump announcing the selection the day before being sworn into office. Roberts appears eager to perform and wrap up the confirmation process for Perdue so the committee can focus on other confirmation hearings of lesser USDA posts and Farm Bill discussions. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Buy your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook. It's a bit more than a week away now. On Tuesday of next week at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You can see all the details and buy your tickets online at willag.org, willag.org. The cost is just $30. Or call this number right now, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Let's turn our attention to ethanol now. You know, the fight in Congress over whether to expand, shrink, or freeze the nation's ethanol mandate seemed to intensify last week after comments by a key player on Capitol Hill. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway told the annual USDA Ag Outlook Conference he'll urge lawmakers with a say on the issue to keep the renewable fuel standard where it is, to hold current refinery investors harmless, but not to expand RFS requirements, which expire in 2022. Ethanol industry groups wouldn't comment on Conaway's remarks. These followed a Senate chairman last year who argued, based on a Government Accountability Office, or GAO, report, that the RFS is not sustainable and will not reach its 2022 goals. Compounding the industry's political dilemma, new Environmental Protection Agency Chief Scott Pruitt, as Oklahoma Attorney General, called the RFS unworkable, a point driven home at Pruitt's confirmation hearing by Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth, who says the RFS helps employ more than 4,000 in her state and generates $5 billion for the state's economy. But despite the threat, American Farm Bureau Executive Director Dale Moore says he's confident the RFS will survive despite Pruitt's stance.
Our expectation is he's going to be working, you know, with the farmers that support the renewable fuel standard, with the industry that supports it, as sure as he's going to be working with others. And just a keen hope that we're talking about a review, hopefully maybe finding ways to improve the RFS so it continues to do, you know, the job it has to build the biofuels industry in this country.
Well, North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp calls it no surprise advanced biofuels have not reached volumes or greenhouse gas reduction targets, blaming market uncertainty from EPA's failure to complete earlier RFS rules on time. Heitkamp pointed out earlier that President Trump backs the RFS and won much of his support in the heartland, vowing to appoint a farmer-friendly EPA chief, which many in agriculture agree Trump did, especially on regulatory issues like Waters of the U.S. However, Pruitt did oppose the EPA approval of E15, and as Illinois' Duckworth argues, has failed to embrace the RFS fully. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Let's check in now with Greg Johnson. He's at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon, Todd. Pleasure.
Tell me about basis locally and then basis contracts for corn, too, if those are in play.
Yeah, basis has continued to get better on corn by about 3 cents a month. There's good carry in the market with this 2.3, 2.4 billion bushel carryout. The market is paying farmers and elevators to store corn. With beans, they'd like to get the beans moved before the South American crop starts taking away most of our export business. So we've seen basis levels kind of stall out here. There's not as much carry in the bean market as there is in the corn market. So we have had some farmers that need money, cash flow, have been putting corn and beans on basis contracts and getting some advanced money off of that. So that's been keeping a lid on how much that basis has improved. But in general, corn basis is improving 3 cents a month, bean basis not quite as much.
And as we wrap up the end of the crop insurance setting time, what are your thoughts about the coming crops?
I think in areas that can't grow 200 bushel plus corn, this $10 plus February bean average is going to incent farmers, like in the Dakotas, out in Kansas, maybe down in the South, to plant more beans. But here in the I states, Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, where we can grow 200 bushel plus corn, I don't get the sense that we're going to see as big a switch. I think we'll see some shifting, you know, 1 or 2%. But as far as major shifting, I think that'll be in those other states that don't grow typically the 200 bushel corn.
Will it be as big as USDA said last week, 4 million bush or 4 million acres?
That's probably on the high side, but 3 million, you know, somewhere between 3 and 4, I think I wouldn't argue with that.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. What are your bids for the day?
Cash corn finishes down 3 cents today at 3.48, and the beans finish down 2 cents today at 9.92.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Greg Johnson. He is with the Andersons. Well, on this Monday afternoon, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. John Davis is with us. He's with Wrist Pulse out of Chicago. Good afternoon to you, John.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, tell me about the weather forecast, and you can start either in the southern or the northern hemisphere, whichever you think is of most importance.
Oh, we'll start in the northern hemisphere, where certainly the anomalous warmth that we've had for the last couple of weeks, we're not going to have anything that extreme coming up. However, we are still going to be well above normal in the temperature pattern as we go through the next 2 or 3 weeks. So again, not the kind of crazy warmth that we had last week and the week before, but still above normal temperatures very consistently as we go through the first half of March.
How out of the ordinary is this for this year and for any year for that matter?
Well, extremely. I mean, if we go through January, was exceedingly warm. This month is going to be one of the warmest Febs of all time, and it looks like March is going to be on the warm side, but not to the levels of this month and last month, but to have 3 months in this kind of category, pretty unusual situation, and that's very widespread across the whole central U.S.
It has put the Southeast, I suppose, way ahead of schedule in terms of trees budding and the springtime. Any concerns about the weather as it's related to agriculture in the United States?
Well, from an agricultural standpoint, the one area that we're watching is the Western Plains, where, of course, the winter wheat crop has come out of dormancy, and it's kind of more typical of growth in late April or early May than at this time of year. And the concern is that if we do get any additional cold air masses coming in this spring, then you could have some issues there. We're also concerned about dryness across the Western Plains, especially Western Kansas, where they they have been very dry this month and really no signs of any rainfall going forward through the middle portion of March.
Can you update the weather forecast in Mato Grosso for me as they harvest their soybean crop?
Absolutely. A very normal type of a pattern across that region. And of course, normal at this time of year does mean some periodic moderate to heavy rainfall. So we are getting some rains across the region, but it's nothing that unusual. So from a standpoint of whether it's Mato Grosso, whether it's further on south in Argentina, pretty normal, favorable growing conditions across most areas in South America.
All right. Hey, thank you so much. We'll talk with you or Mark Russo again next week.
My pleasure, Todd.
That, of course, is John Davis. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.